My first guest in the studio this afternoon is an alto and tenor player, composer, band leader. He produces new music in a modern mainstream tradition, calling New York home since 2004. He headlines clubs throughout the city, as well as concert halls and festivals around the world. Influenced by the greats of the saxophone, such as Dexter Gordon, Cannonball Adderley, and informed by a youth, he says, misspent playing rhythm and blues and ska back here in Australia. His jazz is original, approachable, and always swinging, as we just heard. My second guest was inspired by her father's musical friends, including Clark Terry and Major Holly, which sparked her focus on jazz. Her first paid musical engagement was with her own band at Clark Terry's 75th birthday party. She was 10 years old. Since then, her piano and voice skills have been recognised by peers and critics as distinctive and sophisticated. This young woman from Oklahoma captivates audiences in New York's finest jazz rooms and in concert halls around the world. Nick Hempton and Champion Fulton, welcome to Sydney and welcome to Now's the Time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us. You say, Nick, a youth misspent playing ska and rhythm and blues, but there must have been some influence to pursue music in the first place. So how did you discover your calling as a saxophonist?
I have no idea how to answer that question. There's certainly a lot of music there because my family's all classical musicians. So I did grow up playing classical clarinet and piano until I was about 15, and then I kind of went off the rails and, I don't know, went to the wrong side, went to the dark side. So somebody gave me a saxophone and that was it. Like, the clarinet went under the bed, classical music took a back seat, and I discovered jazz, and that's all I wanted to do. So, I never looked back after that.
You grew up here in Sydney?
Yeah. Until I left when I was about 28, but all of my teens and 20s I was here.
And a Sydney Con student?
Depends who you ask. I did a short stint, until we all decided it was not the place for me. I did a little bit there. But most of it was from private teaching, so I left the Con and was studying with Bobby Gebbett, the great piano player, and Jason Morford on saxophone, and those guys were kind of showing me what to do.
And Champion, to you, I mentioned that you played for Clark Terry at his 75th birthday party, but of course you've become a mainstay on the vibrant New York jazz scene, performing with royalty, musical royalty, such as Lou Donaldson, Frank Wes, Eric Alexander, Buster Williams, and others. Your main influence was your father. He was a trumpeter and educator. So his name was Stephen Fulton. Mm-hmm. Tell us about him.
Well, he is a jazz trumpet player, flugelhorn player. He's on my most recent album, The Stylings of Champion. And music was always in the house. He was very good friends with Clark Terry. I met Clark when I was like 2 weeks old. And I loved the music. And he always had so much fun doing it with his friends. And I thought I would like to have fun as well. And I started playing piano. I was like 3 or so. And we started playing gigs when I was 8 and performing. And it was just something that I thought was so much fun and enjoyable. And I wanted to be a part of that.
It's rare for someone as young as you to continue to pursue jazz. You know, if you've been introduced to it, you normally sort of discover other forms of music and pursue those in search of commercial gain.
Well, I think jazz is one of the most beautiful and exciting human endeavors we have. And I love music, but for me, there's nothing like the creativity and the feeling that you can get being a jazz musician and being a jazz listener. And I always think about the Art Blakey quote, you know, that life, jazz washes away the dust of everyday life. And for me, that's very true. And that's just what I want to be a part of.
But your band had quite a long-term residency at the famed New York City club Smalls. How did that come about?
Ongoing, actually. I kind of got there on the ground floor because Smalls had been around since the mid-90s before I got to New York. And then I moved there and the club closed down, and then it was bought out by a piano player who I happen to know and had played with already. So I was, from the very beginning, that was my hangout, and I was there every night. And that's, I mean, it's still jam sessions every night at this place until 4, sometimes a little bit later in the morning. And that was always the hangout as far as I was concerned. So I still go there all the time, and it just kind of became a gig.
this new album is a sort of a slight change in direction for you with the Hammond organ sound. Tell us about that.
It's something that I've been doing for years, and I don't know why I didn't ever put two and two together and say, let's record this band. I would play with organ bands and then record the acoustic, like the piano group, but I realized I was doing this more and more, and it was a sound that was just, that was what I was hearing in my head all the time. And I happened to be able to put this great band together. The guitarist, Peter Bernstein, who is, I'm sure your listeners know him, and he's very hard to catch because he's on the road all the time. But I managed to get all these guys in the same room at the same time, and it was a natural thing to do. And it felt so good. We did, we found this great recording studio where we could all sit in the same room together, and we knocked it out in about 5 hours, I think, this whole album. And it just felt perfect. So I'm really happy with the way it came out, and we're going to do it again in a couple of months. Same band, same studio, we're going to do it all again.
Sounds fantastic. A beautiful swinging feel tonight, Al. Champion, tell us about your educational relationship with Clark Terry. This really interests me. It's quite a tangible link to the legacy of this music, isn't it?
Yes. Well, Clark really loved to pass the music down to younger generations, both to inspire young jazz musicians, but also to inspire young jazz listeners. And he spent a lot of time in the schools, high schools and universities, you know, directing the bands, guest clinicking, and just telling stories and things like that. I was around for a lot of that when I was little and able to observe him. And again, I thought it seemed like something that was important and something that was enjoyable. And so I would like to consider myself, you know, in his legacy, doing the same thing. I'd like to have clinics and master classes and expose young people to this music.
And he's been passing on that legacy ever since, I guess, Miles Davis, really, hasn't he?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right. And he really got involved with the schools when he was on the TV show, on the Tonight Show band in New York, and he would go out and do things like that. And I think for him, he always said his inspiration regarding interacting with the audience and with young people was Duke Ellington. And so I sort of like to think that that's, you know, Duke Ellington to Clark, and then my inspiration being Clark, so like a little straight line between me and Duke Ellington there, with Clark in the middle.
Nice.
Now, Nick, I discovered you write a blog called Nick's Catch and Release.
Wow, somebody's talking about the blog. Fantastic.
And you know, back in 2015, I think you released quite an innovative album, although it's not in my collection, Catch and Release, quite an experimental type thing where you recorded and released track by track every 6 weeks before collating the whole lot into a CD release. Sort of like writing entries on a blog, I guess.
Kind of. And that's I mean, the blog started for that. This was a time in the dim, dark past where we didn't know where music release was going to go. We didn't know if there was going to be, if streaming was going to take over or if people were going to keep downloading music. So I don't know, it felt weird to keep putting out CDs. I wasn't sure if anybody was going to keep buying them. So we just did digital releases. But I thought making it all, the whole process visible to the audience, the writing of the music, the rehearsing, the recording, the production, everything I put on this blog. We'd make videos, we'd take photos. So everybody could see the real ins and outs of putting this music together. And I would do one every 6 weeks or so. So it turned out to be about an album's worth over a year. And that's what the blog was. And I would walk people through the whole thing. I've now kept the blog going. It's just sort of talking about travel and, you know, the work I do on the road.
And it's quite an interesting read, might I say.
Thanks, man.
I was reading about, you know, so your explorations. It looked like you were out fishing out in the ocean. Or
I don't remember what that was.
Shucking oysters.
Oh,
and,
yeah, that's right, yeah.
And coffee and various lovely, delectable pursuits.
I try to keep music and travel and food and all these kind of things that I'm interested in, kind of stick them all together in one place, because I think that's, I don't know, that's why I'm doing
it. It's a natural correlation, isn't it?
I totally agree. Yeah.
And Champion, you're releasing an album next year of Charlie Parker's music to celebrate his centennial. What will be your approach to that album in terms of how you portray his music? Who will be your collaborators, etc.?
We actually just recorded this about 10 days ago when I got home. In between our tour in Europe and our time here, we were home for a few days, and I actually just recorded it. It's with my regular band, which is on the stylings of Champion. Fukushi Tainaka on drums, Hide Tanaka on bass. My father, Stephen Fulton, is on 3 or 4 cuts. And our special guest is tenor saxophonist Scott Hamilton.
Wow.
which I love Scott. This will be the second record we've made together. And Scott and I went through, you know, the music of Charlie Parker, which I love and he loves. And we selected tunes that were our favorites. Some lines, we're doing Yardbird Suite. We recorded Diverse. We recorded a couple blueses. I recorded Quasimodo as a trio feature. And then I'm singing the standards he played, Star Eyes, Out of Nowhere, This Is Always. And it's very much, you know, my take on his music. So we've made some nice arrangements that feature the guys in different ways. And I think it's going to be very nice. I'm hoping for a release in late spring of 2020, which is his centennial.
What can listeners expect from these performances? I notice you have the very, very busy Andrew Dickerson on the drums this Friday and Saturday nights, and also the wonderfully accomplished Ashley Turner, who lived in New York City for a number of years himself.
Everybody spent time in New York, I think. When I first went there, my first trip was in 96, and Ashley was actually living there at the time. But this group, we did the Foundry last year, and that was the first time Champion had played with Andrew and Ashley, I think. Mm-hmm. And it just gelled immediately. It was so great. Like, you never know what it's going to be like when people from different worlds come together and play jazz, but obviously we all had the same ideas about things, and it was super swinging straight away. So I think
this weekend's
going to be like that.
I think Andrew is, I'm going to say, I think he's one of the best drummers, really, that I've encountered anywhere in the world. And Ashley and him are wonderful. We played with them a little bit last night at the jam session at the Manly Jazz Festival, the closing jam session. And it's just super fun.
Will it be as spontaneous as just simply calling a tune?
Well, we have some arrangements that we've worked out. Andrew likes, and drummers like arrangements. You know, they like things to sort of play around, I think. And we have some arrangements and some original tunes we'll be doing, and I'll be singing, and we never know what's going to happen, but it'll be a lot of Great American Songbook and jazz standards.
Champion likes to keep us on our toes, too.
Yes,
there's no set lists. We just wait nervously around to hear what tune is going to be next. You never know.
How has the U.S. president changed America since he's taken office?
Champion?
Well, I don't know. I don't think America changes very much, really, ever at all. It's too big and too many people, and time moves. Your presidential term is 4 years, which is not very long in the sort of a cultural perspective. I don't know. I don't feel things are different particularly.
Also, like a lot of the point of art and music is to keep you away from that kind of essentially ugliness. You know, like politics is uglier whoever's in power.
Yes.
We don't really want to be involved in that. Mm-hmm. If we can show people the actual, some deeper things of life through art and culture and music, I think that's our job. So in a way, it doesn't really affect it at all.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.